You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh.
Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing okay and staying safe. My guest today is Charlie Barnett. Charlie is a wonderful actor who I love to watch in absolutely anything. We were at Juilliard together. He was in the class right after me with my husband and is a close friend of ours. He's done a lot of work in TV since school, including Russian Doll on Netflix, which I was excited to get a chance to talk about his experience on. It's a fantastic show, and he's incredible on it. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, I highly recommend it. He was also on Chicago Fire and Tales of the City, which we didn't really touch on in this conversation, but coincidentally, he and my last guest, Murray Bartlett, act opposite each other on that show and are fantastic together. He's such a warm-hearted and open guy, and recording this really made my day. I'm looking forward to sharing this conversation with all of you. I hope you enjoy the 158th episode of The Compass. Okay, let's get started. Okay. What do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side as an artist?
That's a hard one. it's a tightrope walk for me. I at risk of sounding masochistic, I do enjoy as an artist exploring the dark side, I'll say. I think you have to be comfortable with it. If you're not, why are you doing this? Comfortable may be a strong word, but you have to at least be brave enough to go to those places. And so for me, I've realized, you know, unwillingly a lot of the time in getting to those places in a natural spot in my life or as an artist, you know, at school and shit like that, or just the strife of everything going around you, utilizing it and seeing how it can kind of like relay in your performance. I've started to, you know, at 32, appreciate the dark sides of myself, of my mind, and it's changed my relationship with them. But I will say, in order to protect myself, because you always need, you know, there's the dark side of, like, I'm playing a suicidal alcoholic, but he's beautiful, you know? But then there's the dark side of, like, I just walked into 5 auditions and these people didn't give me the time of day and they gave me 9 extra pages to read in the room, and I hate myself and hate everything that I do, and I'm not creative and talented. That kind of dark side is extremely dangerous.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, what does that mean to you when I say that? Those are two good categories.
It's terrifying, but I also know that it kind of comes with the territory. The way that I get through it is creating conversations with myself, and it's a lot of fucking work. It's time. It's like that muscle has not been worked to its fullest for me, I know. So it takes a lot of, strangely enough, just thinking back on this, we had Bradley Whitford came and talked to us about getting notes, and he had this quip about, I remember when I was receiving notes, my first thought would be, fuck you, you're an asshole. My second thought was, I'm such a fuck up, I'm terrible, I hate myself, I'm the worst actor. And the last one would be, what was the note?
Right, I remember that.
He's like, I've just gotten better, or at least I'm not gotten better. He's like, I can get through those actions quicker.
To the third one.
Yeah. And for me, I've always just kind of like, applied that to, you know, in talking to myself and amping myself, and specifically in like dark moments. I'm not great at it right now, but I'm getting better and better, and it's getting quicker and quicker. And it becomes easier and easier for me to be like, oh, that's one of those moments, I'm getting dark on myself. Because the key is, as much as those people are assholes or treated you like shit in that room that you walked into, or, you know, you felt like you didn't do as well as you could do, majority of the time, it's all in your own head. Whether or not it's true or not, cool. That, you know what I mean? That could be assessed in some light. But you're the one who's punishing yourself majority of the time. not to be said that it's not incredibly difficult to stop that, but that's what I notice in myself. And if I can change that conversation in my head, I can change the darkness.
Yeah, I totally relate. I feel like I'm definitely the hardest on myself. And oftentimes crazy. Other people didn't even notice what you thought, like whatever nerves you were feeling or whatever you thought was going on, because they're probably thinking about themselves.
150%, you know? Yeah. Or they're just like, you know, it could be even just that, like, callousness, you know what I mean? Like, they're thinking about, like, I have to feed my daughter today, and I'm sorry, I started thinking about that during your audition, and that sucks. Yes, it does. But,
right.
You know, we're all human, and shit happens. You can't take it personally. And what I've learned, when you learn how to not take it personally, it protects you. Because who cares either way? I'm good enough that I will continue to work and get better. I will, you know, apply what I feel like I was lacking in that audition to my next one to be better. But, no, fuck those people. Like,
whatever, who cares either way? Over the course of your career, how has your relationship to auditioning changed?
A lot. You know, auditioning is a muscle, right? That's so funny to say, but it is really true. It's like a muscle. I have a love-hate relationship with it, because it's a workout for me. It's just like going to a gym, you know? You see that it's so necessary. God, this is such a layered one for me. And I really, almost like the fear aspect, I really like it because it shakes me up. It makes you fucking humble. You know, you walk into a room and you feel like you have some power or clout, and you walk into a room and look at the people around and feel that kind of judgment. And I don't want to say you feel turned down on yourself, because it's not the same as like beating yourself up, but you feel a sense of humbleness when you're like, oh, these people are probably just as talented as me and doing just as much. And that reminds me that I need to keep fucking working. You know, mm-hmm. I need to keep applying all my best that I can to get better and better. So I really love auditioning for that. I think it just keeps me moving. But there is a sense that I've, and maybe I'm being really selfish in this, but I will admit this right now to actors, to us artists. You get to a place where you're like, oh my God, I'm in my career and I've been doing this for a while. I watch, like, you know, so many of our friends get offers left and right. They don't have to audition anymore.
Right.
And I'm like, well, when do we get to that point? And God knows, it would be a lovely time to be able to just get a call and be like, we love what you do. You don't need to work for us. We want you to have it. But I'm not there.
That does sound very nice.
It does sound
Yeah, that they're nice. Aware of your work and so much that they would trust that you could do whatever they needed.
Right? Yeah. It's like I'm terrified of that moment come, because I feel like it's a part of the start of a downfall that makes you really lazy as an actor. It makes you stop, like, needing to work so hard, you know, because you're like, what do I need to work for? They're calling. but there's the other side of me, just talking about auditioning, that I'm like, I feel like I'm just pushing to a point of being like, I'm just waiting for them to not audition me anymore and just be calling in.
Well, so much about what we love to do as actors is like the collaboration part of it. And the thing that is hard for me to get over about auditions is you're so much in the dark. You're just on your own so much with it. And there's a lot of background that you don't know, or discussions that you don't know what direction they're coming at it from. And you're making a lot of assumptions based on the clues that you have. And I just always wish we could jump to that place where, yeah, we already know each other a little bit and we can have this conversation and we're working on it together, instead of like, I'm just going to show you this guess that I have.
Yeah, because of that, I realized early on, and even still today, I still like throw myself at every audition that I can. I mean, my agents will be like, you're not right for this. And I'm like, I don't fucking care. Put me
just
in the room,
practice.
Because I know it's going to work. What was that?
Like, just to practice.
Just to practice. I mean, it got me to a point, Frankie and I would talk about it during pilot season when he was out here. Him included, we'd be burnt the fuck out because we have literally 4-3 auditions a day sometimes. It's just like, what? I can't memorize 28 pages every night. I cannot do it. But it got me, on one aspect, it got me more and more comfortable in the room, yes, but it also got me caring less and less. So that when I walked into rooms and I didn't get it, because of the bullshit of like, it was probably because I was too tall. Or, you know,
right.
I did that one movie and, you know, they didn't like that character and they're worried about the reflection on it on this one. Any kind of whatever political bullshit, I don't really care anymore. Because I'm like, well, I got 10 more. I don't have that many auditions anymore. We're in the middle of a pandemic. I have none right now, so I need to shut up. But you know, I have hopefully 10 more next year, you know, or next
right.
month.
Like, right. How are you guys doing during this time, this crazy, crazy time?
It's. Yeah, I was talking to my mom the other day about this. It feels really bad sometimes to say that you're doing good, you know?
Right.
That you feel safe or comfortable or, you know, that you have savings to rely on. Because so many people, by no fault of their own, I'm sorry, I'm getting like a little emotional, but by no fucking fault of their own, are not. And it's...
It's really scary.
It's really scary and it sucks because we're also in a position where we can't help. We can't reach out. We can't like go volunteer. I can't go to a shelter and donate my time. I can't go help my parents. I can't fly home and make sure that they're safe. It's this weird predicament of being like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So that emotional and the mental kind of side, I think, is really difficult personally for me.
Right.
But I'm so grateful to feel safe, healthy, with a partner who, you know, our only fights have been about, like, the most unnecessary, stupid shit. So it's like, oh, I'm just annoyed of you, so let's just give each other some space and move on. You know, it's like, it's been so damn good. So, and I hope that I have work to come back to. I know that this industry throughout, I mean, we haven't been around this world for a long time. You know, we're both young folks, but we've seen through pandemics, smaller pandemics, but through pandemics, through terrorist, you know, destruction, through leadership changes, through blackouts, through, you know, financial ruins. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this art be resilient, not only, but also be what people turn to for hope and for balance and for, yeah, even cheaply entertainment, you know? And because of that, I'm not worried for us. I'm just, I'm worried for theater, if anything.
Yeah. Well, and no, I'm not worried for the art form as a whole. It's just like yeah. you said, like the day-to-day financial survival and health of everybody who is dependent on it until we can get to the other side, you know.
I'm really hoping that, you know, and if there's any light at the end of the tunnel, that because of it being this kind of switch up, when things, you know, knock on wood, if we do get a vaccine and things can actually really start moving quickly, it's going to create so much more opportunity for people who haven't had a chance, I really think, because there's going to be so much work that wants to get done, that needs to be put out.
Fast.
And not enough people. Like, that person's working on this project and this project. I'm sorry, you have to find somebody else. And it's like, I really hope to see, like, a lot of our friends that we know deserve a fucking chance.
That's a really hopeful way to look at it. I like that.
I hope. I'm just putting it out there.
I didn't get to see it, but did I see on social media that you were doing some like readings and stuff in your spare time right now? Have you gotten to do a little bit?
I'm trying to do as many as I can. You know, even like Samira called one day, Cameron and Dylan and I. Am I allowed to like drop names like that?
Yeah, why not? Okay. These are friends of ours from Juilliard, everybody.
Yeah. called one day and was like, I'm bored. We're not doing anything. Can we read a play? And we were like, yeah, why not?
Aww.
So we all like picked up White Noise from Susan Laurie Parks, which is like not an easy play just to like shift.
Read into. Blind.
Oh my God. But we all sat down and read it just for like fun. I have been doing a couple for like charity for, you know, for theaters and for like the SAG After Foundation. I'm doing you know, other ones with friends who are trying to do films, like Brock and Creed are trying to do one out in the ranch. And so just like reading through just to kind of develop the script. Again, look, I'm all about, I know my ass is lazy. I know I'm a procrastinator. I learned this at Juilliard from my lovely professor, Becky Guy. She was an angel and she told me it real. and because of that, I've learned that, like, look, if this is who you are and you know this about yourself, yeah, it's a downfall, but you can use tactics and tools to keep yourself on top of it. And by forcing myself into auditions when it's too much, or by forcing myself to go into rooms that I'm not perfect for, or to do readings, it keeps my muscle going, and I need it more than they need me. I'll tell you that. So I'm so fucking thankful to be doing readings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had a great one for, I think it was for Louisville, and for SAG-AFTRA.
Actress Theater of Louisville. I think, was that the one that you did with Mirai?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I had seen it on her Instagram. That's why I knew you guys had been doing readings. I love her.
Great program too. Mirai, man, another one that I'm like, this, why has she not gotten her due? I mean, she's been successful, but like, that is an actress
fantastic.
She's so fantastic. So fantastic. And this program, I mean, Play-Per-View is great. I love the idea of it. I hope it continues after this. It seems like a really cool idea.
I honestly, like, we've been in this strange little parent bubble, and it's been weird because we just haven't had the bandwidth to participate in any of that, like the artistic offerings that have been happening online. So I feel a little bit disconnected from it. Because by the end of the day, I'm just like done.
Yeah. I mean, look, I cannot imagine having a child through this right now. I will say, I mean, probably easier to be, I mean, a 7-year-old would be really difficult because you have to explain it to her.
Right.
Might be, you know, the golden light through this is that she's so young and you get that time that a lot of parents probably wouldn't have if we weren't going through a pandemic. But I cannot imagine what you guys are going through. I feel for you so deeply.
It's a special
thing.
So
don't worry. About we'll watch the theater.
Okay, good. You keep an eye on it.
Although the cool thing I will say about this, like, my parents watched the production. I think it was like a 2-hour show, which is, a little bit long. But my mom was like, it was great. I was able to, like, watch, go to the bathroom and listen, grab a glass of wine. Like, it was just a show in the background in my personal home. I loved it.
That's
like, cool.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom.
So you grew up in Florida, right? In Sarasota. Mm-hmm. And you came to Juilliard right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Which, we had a different experience in that way since I went from grad school.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience like when you left Juilliard? Like going out into the world as an adult for the first time into this industry. What was that transition like?
Not easy. I was one of those people who, I sat down with many of our teachers at Juilliard and I remember having a conversation with Becky and Richard, telling them I thought that I needed to go back to school, but I was like, I really think that I should go and apply to Yale or NYU grad because I just need to do this all over again.
You had that conversation like around graduation or after?
I had my junior year with Becky, and I think I had my senior year with Richard. We did our showcases, which is towards the end of the year for anybody listening.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like towards the beginning of it. I remember even like Drew Foster and I, both classmates, had not even discussed together, but we were both interested in like becoming faculty or like becoming teachers. Because I was like, I just didn't trust myself. I didn't trust having an opportunity. You know, my experience at Juilliard was not awesome. that being said, I still respect and love it and cherish it, but it was not awesome.
Right.
And there was a lot of like mental strife for me. And because of that, I did not believe in myself on exiting. I think by showcase, I had started like, I hate to admit this, but it's because it's so shallow in a certain way. I'm going to turn back to my mom, because my mom's the one that convinced me that this was okay to do. And I guess she kind of changed the frame of it in my mind. But I started really like powering down on being like, fuck it, I'm just going to work out. I'm going to try and get as like fit as I can for at least like showcases. So even if my acting doesn't like support my talent, which is so shitty, I was like, well, fuck it. Like, I've seen people walk out of here with agents just because they're pretty. So let me try. Let me try. And every check, let me check it out of my book.
Right.
My mom said something to me. She was like, look, think about it. And she's a homeopathic doctor, so she thinks about it from a health scope. And she's like, a violinist at your school goes and finds a violin that is made from wood that is like, you know, molded from the perfect oak, and it is bent to like perfection and varnished in the right way so it resonates the sound perfectly and the strings are tight. You can't have a violin made out of like plywood, you know, lacquered up and then, you know, thrown on some fucking yarn. It's not going to play right. Your body is your violin as an actor, and you have to take care of it. You have to make sure that it is in pristine shape. That doesn't mean you have to be the fucking Rock. That doesn't mean you have to be a size zero. That means whatever it means for you to be healthy.
Right.
And it took me a couple, you know, even through that last year of being like, this is all about image, or is it about like me being healthy? It took a lot of balance between that. I've come to a place where I'm like, fuck abs. I need to work out because it makes me feel mentally able and capable to fight my next day. So I'm really happy with it now. But I had turned into a place of at the end of the year just being like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I have to make something work.
Right. Well, and so that was you dealing with that. I mean, knowing you as an actor, like dealing with that dark side, telling yourself one thing that wasn't true.
Yeah.
Like you were prepared, but I'm sure you felt like you weren't.
No. And all throughout my life, that little voice that we're talking about, that dark voice, I think about it now and it is my push too, you know? So it's like, it is that respect. I hate it, but it keeps me remembering that like, I have to work at all angles, you know? As soon as I was like, oh, well now you're getting fit, you must be a shit actor. So go... read some fucking Chekhov and dissect it.
No, I mean, I was kind of having an anxiety day yesterday, and I could feel myself telling me those negative things, and that, you know, I'm just not good enough, or blah blah blah, failure or whatever it is. And it, like you said, I've gotten quicker of it, at least being aware of it and knowing that, like, I just need to sit in being uncomfortable today, and then it's gonna pass.
Yeah.
And I need to just let it go, and I probably won't believe these things are true in the morning.
Yeah. You know, Bradley Whitford, Leslie Headland, who's a writer who wrote with Natasha, Russian Doll, and, you know, she wrote Bridesmaids, like Dylan was in. Incredible, incredible writer, writes from the soul. And she and I had many conversations about that voice and how you utilize it. She has a strong voice too, you know? And from like those two people, a lot of people that I've seen in this industry, learning how to, trying to push that voice down and hide it never fucking works. You end up way worse. If you can learn how to almost like find the balance of listening, accepting, or moving past it by letting it get out and getting ahead of it, It's like a weird balance of respect and also like, I control you. Thank you for reminding me, but that's not what I need right now. Then it's so valuable. You know what I mean? It is just, it can be your, it's for me, it's why I'm able to tap into my emotions. You know what I mean? Like, I would never want to lose it, but I need to learn how to control it. Yeah. But I have them every day too, Leah. They come every day.
What was it like working on Russian Doll with all of those heavy themes? I mean, what you've told me, it sounds like it was an amazing group of people and like you all handled it in a really healthy way. But what was that process?
It was really difficult. it was really difficult, but anything that's not difficult is like, why would you want to experience it? If this is easy, I'd be like, it's shit. Because it was so hard, I was like, maybe it will be good. I don't know. I don't want it to sound like it was all, you know, I think about my crew members and being like, am I being a hypocrite by being like, it was all like roses and amazing. It was unbelievable. It truly was amazing, but it was really fucking difficult and challenging. And like, I was ready to like jump off a building sometimes, not literally speaking, but in a, you know, mental or metaphysical way.
Right.
No pun intended, because my character does.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It deals with that situation.
Look, I can joke about these things because I've been there.
You went through it. Well, because I remember talking to you when you were filming it, and you were like, night shoots every night in the East Village, Lower East Side, like, staying up.
I mean, there was that side of it. There was like the technical side of, we were just shooting at late hours and not getting sleep, and you know, the scripts were changing a lot because it's a very specific, and you know, no blame to our creators. They were doing the best job that they had the opportunity to do to make that script as strong as it was. And that required a lot of details. And,
right. Specificity.
Yeah. And so, you know, we were all working as we went. And that is really, really difficult, especially if you're working on a script like this that is revisiting, returning, cycling back over the same thing a million times over. But, you know, Natasha and myself being the only two actors that aren't experiencing it for the first time every time, you know, we have to relive it and acknowledgement of, we've lived through this, we're experiencing it again and again and again and again. And that those layers that go on top of it change, you know, as you know, it changes every time that you walk into that room. So each experience is so different, but for everybody else, they're just living it the first time. Hmm. I had to map out everything. And Jamie Babbitt, who is one of our directors, who's an unbelievable director, and Frankie's worked with her.
Yeah.
Praises her.
So wonderful.
She's so good. She's incredible. She would come up to me and be like, great, I love that you made this whole like map, and it's so good, you did all the background, wow, applause, applause. Now you need to throw all that shit away, because you're locked in your head and you're only thinking of the map.
Like, move here, pick this up. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it was a challenge. It was like, you know, every time you would get somewhere, you'd have to be like, oh, go back to here, like, go here, do that. You know what I mean? It was like jumping all around. And psychologically, for me performing it, like, I was still drinking at the time. Mm-hmm. I was drinking heavily at the time. I had maybe a couple of experiences where I'd call my partner walking home, like, wasted in the streets of New York, being like, I don't know where my reality ends and where this character exists now. And, you know, I've had that experience before in school, and it led me to a really unhappy and dark place. And those places are scary, but again, having experienced it, having lived through it, and being able to kind of face it in a different way, you know, I went home, I slept, I woke up, I got some space away from it, and I, you know, a couple months later, I decided that I needed to stop drinking, because that's what was kind of holding me back and making, or at least putting me in places that I was risking. I was risking my own self.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I was really thankful to have those experiences from Russian Doll, because it brought me to where I am now. But yeah, it was hard. It was really hard, and so damn fulfilling at the same time. Like, I learned a priceless amount from Natasha and from Leslie and from Jamie and from Chris, our cinematographer, and from, you know, from the entire team, because it was such a guerrilla style production. You know, we were kind of just like trying to make something work that nobody was sure that would work. You know,
yeah.
I don't, you know, as much as Netflix believed in Natasha, I still don't believe that they were like, yeah, this is going to be as successful as we think it is. I'm unbelievably proud and honored to be a part of it, but I'm so damn proud of
It's such an original idea. I mean, how could you know until the audience had their reaction?
I've lied about this sometimes just to be like, this is going to be easier, so I'm sorry to the public. But I have not watched it all the way through.
Oh my gosh.
I think
this conversation is making me want to watch it again, but I didn't have to film it.
Well, that's the thing, is like,
I can only imagine. Oh my god.
Huh?
I can only imagine just like taking the Groundhog's Day thing to the extreme, watching it now.
I used to like harp on Driver. You know, Driver is like famous for not watching this shit.
Right.
And I used to be like, come on, dude, like, get over it. And now I sit here and I've like yet to watch like five of my fucking things because I'm just like, terrified. So sorry, Driver. I think I get it, but it's still, to me, I'm like, why? Like, come on, get over it. Like,
one day.
You can watch yourself, and actually, it might help you. It might help you a lot. Like,
no, but I'm sure it'd be hard to separate the finished product from all those experiences shooting it over and over and over again.
I mean, do you get this from like watching Friends and all that? Like, I'll see somebody on screen sometimes that we know, and I'll be like, it's really hard for me to like drop out and not be like, oh.
Yeah.
You did that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard, especially depending on what it is. Like sometimes if it's like network TV where maybe the writing isn't so great or something, or it's not really requiring them to use many skills. Like they just need to be themselves and like talk or whatever. You just watch it and you're like, oh yeah, they're doing that thing that I watched them do for 4 years in drama school.
Yeah.
That's so-and-so being so-and-so.
Yeah.
Good job. Make your paycheck.
Yeah. We all do it. We all do it. Except for Rose Byrne and like Meryl Streep and like the best.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but.
Oh, I want to talk about everything.
Oh, it's so good to see you. This is making me so happy. Has your experience working on jobs since you became sober, like, has it changed a lot? Have you had to like reach for different tools? Because I know when I stopped drinking, you know, I was doing it a lot to manage anxiety, and I had to find different ways to deal with that shit.
Yeah, you know, let me be clear. I don't like this term, but a lot of people have coined it. I'm California sober.
Oh, yeah. I don't like it either, but we can just be specific. Since you stopped drinking, you still smoke pot.
I stopped drinking, yeah. I feel like it's important because to the community of people who are sober, I understand that's very different.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean? And I am not entirely sober. And I respect, you know, the people that are. And I don't know, just for me, it's like it needs to be clarified.
No, yeah, thank you for doing so.
Yeah. And it's specific, you know, I didn't go through a lot of the program. I didn't go through AA. I'd gone to a lot of meetings. I took a lot of the tools from it. And I utilize almost everything from the meetings, but didn't go to the meetings. So it's just a part of like respect. I feel like it's mm-hmm. due. But yes, of course. Yeah. It changed a lot. Some for the better, some not, you know, as soon as I stopped drinking, I thought, and I don't know if you had this experience, but I was like, oh my God, everything's going to fall into place. All my problems are going to like figure themselves out. Like I'm going to be like the best ever. And that did not happen at all. I still have to work very hard at solving many other things. The cool thing is I'm a lot more capable at solving them because I don't have this crutch or this kind of scapegoat. I will say too, I cherish and still really respect drinking. I see it as a tool for people. I misuse that tool. I abuse it. And I know that there are a lot of people that do, but I have nothing and no problem with people drinking. I think it should be used as, you know, use it how you can and when you can and in the safest ways possible for you. Myself, can't do that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like an ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend to me. It's like, we had our time. It was lovely. I had so much fun. We have great memories. If I see you at a bar, I'm not going to kick you out. I'm not going to leave. But, like, we also can't fuck together anymore. You know what I mean? It can't go down. It's not helpful. In one aspect, nothing changed, you know what I mean, to a certain extent, except for things within myself, which are so much more important in the long run. On a work scope, I can't deny you know, I stopped drinking and suddenly like all these jobs came, you know, none of them were offers again. But like, I finished Russian and I have to say too, so many people on that set, so much of the crew and the creative staff were sober and entirely sober, not California sober. A lot of them have done the program and I had started so many conversations with them about it, and that's what really initiated me into it. But mm-hmm. I was still really terrified. I had one really terrible experience. I was drunk and got lost in the middle of Williamsburg. You know what I mean? And like fell asleep on a fucking street and woke up to a lovely, lovely little Jehovah's Witness woman who told me that I needed Jesus. As much as I love that thought and appreciate her care and compassion, I took the note. I realized I do need Jesus, but I don't know if I'm going to turn to the church. Not maybe Jehovah's Witness church. Respect, but no, not for me. And so I decided that it was time. It was time that I needed to do this. I needed to do this, or else I was going to lose everything.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I did, because then I got Tales after that. And I got Arrow, and I got that, Jamie Babbitt called me to do a movie with Drew Barrymore. That was an offer, but only an offer because they lost, I think, the actor that was doing it, so it was kind of like a favor
take
actor.
It wasn't like a... Take it, Charlie, take it.
Yeah. She was like, we lost somebody and we need someone, can you do this? And I was like, yeah, what? Yeah. I think about it sometimes and I'm like, there isn't maybe a correlation, but...
Right, but it was still nice. Even if you draw the line and say that it was...
Yeah.
It's a nice encouragement.
Ready, I would have showed up drunk or hung over to a day of work, you know? I mean, I was never really that bad, you know, but I was always pretty good.
Looking back on it, like, you realize how much energy went into that. You know, having your energy sapped out of you in the after effects, or just the energy and thought and time you put into drinking.
I'm reading this book called, because I really, my next goal is to quit smoking cigarettes, mm-hmm. You know, then moving into like setting back on weed, then getting my sleep, like my sleep cycle better. You know what I mean? I've had these like 8 things that I've really wanted to work on since I was, you know, graduating high school and getting into college. You know, when you pick up all the bad shit and you're like, all right, if I'm going to fix myself, I need to figure out these fucking things. But those have been included in there. Luckily, I haven't been smoking cigarettes that long. I started when I was 22, so yeah, a little bit less. But in this book that I've been reading, it's The Easy Ways to Quit Smoking by Alan Carr. It's a pretty famous book.
I read the Easy Way to Quit Drinking book that he has.
I didn't know he had one.
Yeah.
That's so funny because every time I'm reading it, I'm like, this is how I quit drinking too. It's like, you just have to realize that you're stuck in a cycle and you think that somehow this drinking is helping me get out of like my stress, but it's actually just perpetuating it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And whether you're like doing it, you know, I was like a once a week, maybe once a month drinker, but I would drink everything inside.
Right.
And I would, you know, wake up the next morning regretting everything, being like, what did I do? Where was I? I can't remember things. It was fucking terrifying, you know? And that stress would eat me until I went and got another drink.
Yeah.
Because it would make me forget it and black out again. You know, the cycle becomes almost seamless that you don't notice those things. And you're just kind of like, well, I'll just stick in it. But I somehow saw that. And that book laid it out pretty clearly in a smoking sense, but of course there's one for drinking too. I'm sorry, I don't even remember what the question was. I'm not sure if I answered it.
Oh, you did. You did. No, I was just curious. Yeah. Like you said, how things, your approach to work or your experiences with work had changed since you gave up drinking.
The thing is, it's opened me up. Look, we all do, smoking weed included, like we all do these things to avoid stuff. I think we've gotten to a place of thinking that like avoidance is wrong. And I don't believe that like needing to avoid or needing to escape some things is not unhealthy. And you can actually do it in a healthy way. But if it becomes a crutch where every night you're turning to it, or every other week, or any time that you have stress, you utilize it, then yeah, that's not healthy. And moreover, it's not allowing you to be the strongest you can be, to like handle what's going on really in your life. And as an actor, we need to be able to go to those places. We need to be able to tap into them. I'm not saying that we should be able to figure them out. God knows I haven't figured shit out. But we should be able to, like, face it. We should. And drinking was not allowing me to face a lot.
Yeah.
And from clearing it out, I can say, I don't know why, but this feels like really big-headed by saying this, or like I'm on some kind of soapbox. So I apologize for that if it comes off that way. But I do believe that stopping drinking has allowed me to utilize my emotional craft better and understand it clearer, you know?
I do. Thank you for talking about all that with me.
Oh, hey, I would feel most comfortable talking about it with you.
Shifting gears a little bit, you were...
I'm sorry I'm smoking so much.
That's okay.
I'm talking about all this. I'm a fucking...
We're on FaceTime. Charlie is in LA and he's...
I'm calling it out.
Sitting outside, looking lovely in the sunshine.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So, how long after graduation did you get Chicago Fire?
2 years.
2 years. And then that was a long gig. You were on that for years.
Funnily, yes and no, I guess. It was 3.5 years. Three and a half, maybe almost four. 3.5. Yeah.
How did you get through such a long gig like that?
Oh, because the cast and the crew.
That's it. That's just such a different experience, like doing something for that long.
You know, it was a weird one again, too, though, because if it was like we were on a show of 8 people for 7 years, like even 4 years, like you get drained from that. Like, I don't care who you are. I don't care how good the show is. I don't care if it's all family. I mean, look at Schitt's Creek. Great show. You know what I mean? All family, majority, you know, they love each other to death. I don't know why they're stopping in their like most successful season right now, but probably because they're in their 5th season and they're tired, you know, and they want to do something different and new. And no shame to that. Y'all should like quit while it's hot. Smart. But I think that's like an example of like, it doesn't matter how good it is. It's a lot when you're giving this much time, this much energy to a project, making a living, so thank God, you know, but it's draining, and I think people get burnt out really quickly, and especially on a show like Chicago Fire, where you're doing 22 episodes, you know, it's like that is almost unheard of nowadays. They just
huge,
don't,
so yeah. huge,
and they're still doing it.
it's like Grey's Anatomy now.
Say, because we had a cast of like 40, and like you know, spanning over 3 different shows. The weight of, like, you know, the balance of work has become a lot easier. I mean, I'm still very close with all of them. I mean, like, Monica, you know, went to school with us. She's like a big sister to me. And Joe is a big brother to me. And Yuri is one of my closest friends. And, you know, he just got off the show and is now out here. You know, all of them, it's all like family. So I, you know, check in a lot and know that they've balanced out this work schedule so that when I was there, it was very difficult because you were in everything. Everybody had to be there every day.
Right.
All day.
You're just like in the background nature. Or like doing, cleaning the truck
just,
or whatever.
Yeah. The nature of the show.
Yeah.
I will say to you, for me, in a humbling sort of a manner, almost every one of our background members is specifically members of the fire or police or medical community were real. They were real doctors. They were real like nurses. They were, not every single time. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth, but majority of the time, all of our firefighters were real.
Oh, wow.
So for you as an actor to be on set for 17 hours and start complaining, you know what I mean?
Right.
About some shit while there's a real firefighter who has, you know, just spent 48 hours saving people, breaking into a burning home, you know what I mean? Doing exactly what you're bullshitting about. You need to shut the fuck up.
That's, you know what I mean? Fascinating. Like, that's really cool just, that they did that.
There's no space for that. So it was really like, really, for me, I look back and it was a really great show to start off on because it made me like aware of like actor bullshit. We have no time for that and no patience for it. Fuck that. Stop it. Because there are people who give so much more that are here. I mean, look, I'm engaged to a crew member. You know what I mean? I hate that I say that to him, but I'm trying to protect his, you know, his anonymity. but he's more than just a crew member, okay? but I get it. I know his experience, and
right. They
work. We work in a very different way. Our tools are very different, but from every crew member down to, like, especially the PAs, it's crafty, you know what I mean? The people that you think aren't doing anything because you're on set, you know, crying your heart out, they're working all fucking day and missing their families. They have sacrificed more than any of us, and they don't get paid. You know, they don't get the dividend on the end.
Right.
So, yeah, working on that show really clarified a lot of that for me and made me aware of the business or the industrial side of the industry, you know, and how to kind of respect it.
That's so important. That's so important. No, some people aren't aware of that or can be disrespectful.
I don't understand how they aren't. Like,
it's so stupid to me.
I will not. I mean, I don't. I apologize if I've ever flipped on crew members who are listening who can call me out on it because, you know, I'm not. I don't want to be a hypocrite and say that I haven't been an asshole because I probably have. But majority of the time, the only people that I'm fucking assholes to are actors being assholes to fucking crew members. It enrages me because it's like, you know what power you have. Like, why would you misuse that right now? Like, go yell at a producer. Fine. Cool. I don't give a shit. Make sure you don't get your ass fired. But, like, don't yell at your costumer. What the hell is that? Like,
I guess coming from theater, I feel like my outlook has always been that it's an ensemble and we're all making this together. We're all building this together.
Yeah.
But
from film see it any other way though?
Well, that's what I haven't worked in film or TV really, at least not to the extent you have. So is there more of that like hierarchy?
Even today? I've seen it on every edge. You know what I mean? Like it's shitty people. People are shitty people. And not to play devil's advocate, but I'm sure that they're shitty for a shitty reason. You know what I mean? Like, and I
everybody's dealing with their, own shit. All their shitty shit.
Yeah. So like, I have a little bit of like, fine, whatever. You have your shit going on and you're an asshole because of something, but like, I'm not patient for it. I can't say this person's name.
This
wasn't on theater, but this is a theater actor. I know that they've done a lot of theater. We were working on it, and I won't tell you what show, but we were working on something, and they refused to go to set because they were upset. Upset about, like, other things. And some of it legitimate, like, the script wasn't to their liking. Ultimately, I'm also one of those actors who's a little bit verges on the Meryl Streep side of it. Yeah, you should fight for good writing. You should fight for something. But, like, it's also your job to make it good. Mm-hmm. I love a good challenge when I have to make shitty television amazing. Like, it's hard. Like, if you can accomplish that, that's Meryl Streep level shit, okay? So, like, try. Try before you go rush into a writer's office and start bitching about, like, the writing. Like, try and make it work, because it might show you something that you weren't thinking of. That's always what I've gotten to. Every time that I have a problem with something, if I start working on it, majority of the time, if it's not a day later or an hour later, I'm like, oh, my God, how did I not see that? So just work it. There was an actor who was upset about some stuff like that, refused to come up on set and said, you know, they were like, well, it's dinner. Do you want to come eat before we have to film the scenes? No, I don't want to eat. Okay, fine. Well, now we're filming the scene. Do you want to come on the set and film the scene? No, you know what? I actually want Chinese food. Go and order me some Chinese food. I won't come out of my trailer until I have some Chinese. I hope this person listens to this because I hope that they remember what they did.
I doubt they will, but I hope so too.
Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, this might give it away, but the person who was in charge of going to get the Chinese food was the son of a very, very famous director and producer. Very, very famous. But their father had, you know, being the good father that they were, decided my son should not use my clout. They need to start as a PA. So they were working as a PA on this. They were in charge of getting food for this actor. So they go and they find a Chinese place. They bring it back to the trailer. The actor, it's like hard for me to say this, is frustrated because it's not sesame chicken. It's orange chicken, throws it to the ground, and continually refuses to get out to shoot the day. They end the day. They don't finish filming. Send everybody home. Our PA friend goes home, calls his dad, and tells him what happened on set today. That father calls this other actor's father, because the other actor is sort of known well to by his father, and reams the shit out of him. And the next day, that actor comes in and apologizes.
Oh my God. Like,
heaven.
This is sounds like it should be the TV show itself.
It should be an episode of like High Maintenance.
Behind,
you know?
The scenes drama.
Yeah. It's just like, and as a reminder to like actors who lose their patience. I've lost my patience. Like,
be kind.
You can always fix the situation. Just be a human being and apologize. Know when you're wrong. That's fine. You can lose your temper, but like, be right about it. Like, because why bring that kind of bullshit into an already shitty kind of world? Because like, this industry is hard. Don't make it any harder. Especially don't make it harder on this, like the PA who's just trying to figure their life out. God.
How do you and your partner deal with doing so much long distance with this business?
I got really lucky. He is also a military brat. So a lot of times I tell a lot of my actor friends who are like, I'm looking for a relationship. What do I do? And I'm like, just go find yourself a military brat. They're fucking great.
They know how to deal with anything.
Well, you know, it's that to be said, it's still hard a lot of times. But majority of the time I'm the one that's like really upset for having to leave. But for him, you know, I think he's so used to it. His father left for years at a time, and they had to adjust. And because of that adjusting over process of his life, I think he's kind of like, oh yeah, this is just part of it. We definitely don't like try. I have a lot of friends who will be like, I'm only working in LA because of, you know, I'm not leaving my relationship. I don't go about it that hard, and we both as individuals respect each other too much to try and like limit each other to something. You know, he works almost more than I do sometimes, so like sometimes he's the one leaving more during the year. But it's really hard. Temptations are really hard. Mm-hmm. It was a thing for me, especially when drinking, that I was like, I don't want to fuck up. I really don't want to do something in the moment of like, you know, I've been gone for 6 months and I'm just getting hazy and I forget that I have this incredible bond with this human being and this love, and I don't want to fucking be an idiot. It was, you know, drinking was not conducive.
Right.
Blacking out is not helpful to that regard. but in retrospect, from like having done it now for years sometimes, it's, you know, everybody locks it up to communication, and communication is definitely it. Like, you need to have great communication, but it's the ways that you communicate. You can't just like sum it up to being like, I need to get on the phone every night and talk to my partner. The ways and what you talk about is the more important part of it. I realize it. I mean, like, there was a point on our first time being, I was gone for like 6 months. I can't remember what I was filming, but I just realized that like, even talking on the phone, we felt distance because we weren't sharing our days. Like, I didn't know what was going on in his experience. I didn't know what his life, what was happening in his life. And it was horrifying and scary. It was like, I feel so distant because I just don't know who you are. And it's, even though we're here and we're talking to each other, we aren't, it becomes difficult to really like sink in or resonate in the same ways that you did when you were like, you know, laying on the couch and holding each other. But again, it's like, it's work. It's just a muscle that we're continuing to work and take it step by step and day by day. If we feel like we need to change or if I feel like I need to escape and go and see him, I go and talk to my producers and beg them to go home, you know, for a day, you know, even if so.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
That whenever Frankie and I are doing long distance, we always get to a point where we're just like, I love you and I miss you. I don't have anything else to say today. I'm sorry. I don't.
But that's what I'm saying on the communication. Sometimes it's better to be like, you know, we don't need to talk right now. I need like just to just need some space.
How does your family take in your choice to be an artist for your living, for your profession?
It's changed every step of the way. I think that like, you know, in any kind of situation, the more like quote unquote success, that you have, the more right it feels to everybody who's around you. So it's gotten better. but my parents I was adopted. I was adopted at 4 hours, old, so I when everybody says like from birth, I'm always like from 4 hours.
Just to my be parents, specific.
From the get, my parents have been the most supportive of anything that me and my sister wanted to do. My dad's a boat builder, and he fixes cars and owns shops, so he's very outside of it. My mom, I will say, my dad is also a photographer. He has an artist side, and he paints, but he doesn't do it for profession. He does it for his own enjoyment. So it's like, you know, he was a photographer in life as a college, like out of college. And when he met my mom, and I think because he didn't succeed at it, I don't know if that ever had a opinion on him as art. But he never voiced it to me. He would never say like, you shouldn't be an artist because you won't make a living. But I know when a pivotal moment in my life of realizing that my parents were on board, like, because I've been doing musical theater, you know, I've been in theater since I was a kid, and I hated sailing because I sucked at it, and my sister was unbelievable at it. She beat me every fucking time, and I'm competitive as shit. And so I was like, screw this, I'm not doing it anymore. I jumped out of my boat literally one time and left it in the middle of the water, swam to fucking shore. And my mom was like, well, you need to do something. And I started doing theater. And they believed in me in a sense of like, we're your parents and we love you and you're great, right? But they didn't know if I was like really genuinely good or not until I auditioned for Juilliard, kind of on a whim, and we got in. And that was good. That was cool. They were like, cool, cool, cool. But then when I got a scholarship for Juilliard, they came into my work and like sat at my table while I was waiting tables at this like restaurant there, waited for me to be done with everybody. And they were so excited. I remember being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what's going on? And they're like, now we believe in you, because they're actually like, they're giving you money to go there. They're like, you must be good. I was like, oh, now you're on board. Okay,
that sounds like my dad, for sure.
It's like once I got in, they were like, whatever, all right, sure. Which doesn't mean he's still going to make it. If they're paying for it, maybe.
Okay.
Truth be told, though, I should say this just so everyone knows. I come to learn at the end of it that, like, almost all undergrads get some sort of financial aid. And, you know, just for the world to know right now, I'm talking to Leah, and Leah was a graduate student. And at their time, they did not offer any kind of financial aid for them.
Well, so we got really some financial aid, but it was not what it is now, where it's like subsidized or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. I just don't want the world to think that somehow I got the scholarship because, you know, I was more talented or some shit. It was like, no, it was just because you're not a grad. Because
of the FAFSA.
But they really appreciated it, I'll tell you that.
Aww. Okay, well, we've been talking for a while, but I feel like
I'll go on for days.
We could talk for a lot longer. Is there anything that I haven't touched on that you were really looking forward to mentioning or talking about in particular?
No, I mean, like, you know, just because I know that there's like a lot of artists who are probably listening in on this, I just want to like, how do I explain this? I've realized in myself right now in like, you know, you reach plateaus and you think like, I'm one of those people who's always like, I don't think I respect enough of where I'm at and what I've gotten to. because you're always looking to like, well, I have to get to there. And, you know, from down below, you're looking up. You know, I look at our friends like Samir, our driver, and I'm like, whoa, like, if only I could have that opportunity. If only I could get some of those chances. Like, I got to get up there. And I just think about some of the people who are maybe looking back and or looking up and saying the same thing about me. I don't know how to say this. I just want to give people like hope in some way that it's like, this shit is so hard and we're so hard on ourselves. And I don't have any of the answers. I don't know what made it different. And I still feel like even every day that I look around and I know that I've gotten a lot and I've accomplished so much, I still feel like I haven't done shit.
Right.
And I have so much further to go. And I don't know if I'm trying to say like, be good to yourself because it makes it easier in the long run, or like, we shouldn't care so much about the success of it. It's so much easier to say that in a position like I'm at, you know what I mean? So it's like, fuck me. But I don't know. The beautiful thing I'll say about this art is that there are so many fucking outlets. If it's not through acting, if it's not through directing, if it's not through creating, if it's not through being a manager, if it's not through being in publicity, if it's not through being an artistic director, if it's not through being a dramaturg, if it's not, you know, there's so many other ways that we can access this creativity and this specific world. I don't believe that anyone should give up on a dream or a chance to like, you know, well, I'll just go become a casting agent, you know what I mean, because I couldn't do it. But I have found for myself that even, God, I'm getting so confused, you know what I'm saying? But
no, keep going.
Even in pushing against that and trying to succeed in this specific craft of acting, I'm starting to like realize that like it's not my ultimate goal. And my ultimate goal is building these stories. And whatever way that I can do that will be, I think, hopefully when I'm on my deathbed, so much more valuable than saying I was, you know, acted in these or this or this or this, you know? All I'm saying is that it's like, fuck, just don't. I hate that we all beat ourselves up and we think that, like, I haven't made it, so I'm never going to make it. Or I haven't made it, so I'm worthless. Or I haven't made it, so I have no place in this world. It's just, like, so fucking mean, man. There's enough shit around already. Anybody out there listening, you don't have to do that. I swear I'm not high right now. I'm just, like, don't know what I'm trying to say. It's super emotional.
I love it. I get the gist of it.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's very hard.
It's hard. It's so hard, and it's not fair. It is, if anything you can take from it.
Yeah.
It's not personal, but it's also not fucking fair.
It's very tricky. The industry isn't built in a way where there's a clear reward system or path or ladder. There is no such thing as climbing a ladder.
All I know, as hard as this can be, all I know, the best thing about how much our industry has changed in this day and age is that we now have the power to be a creative force on our own. And you can, if you work your ass off. I'm a terrible writer, but I've been working my ass off at trying to get better at it because I want to develop my own things. You
That's
develop
awesome.
Your own things, you have the power to enter in and to take control. So that's all that I can say to everybody to encourage. If you feel like you're stuck, if you feel like you can't go anywhere, nothing's happening, if this industry is fucking you over and you want to figure it out, I would say sit down and figure out how to create. Figure it out how to make something good from your own personal voice. I mean, that's what Natasha did. Natasha sat with me in tears. I remember, I maybe shouldn't be giving this because this is a personal moment, but no, I think she'd be okay with this. I really genuinely do. Like, she sat there and told me, because it's public knowledge. It's not like it's not out there. She was like, I've done like 8 projects and all of them have failed. She's like, I've been trying and trying and trying and none of them have found success. None of them. Everybody's looking at me like I'm this crazy bitch who's like, you know, found some success as a kid and now I'm trying to like weasel my way back in it and I have no talent. No, you know what I mean? She was tearing herself up. And she's like, this is in the middle of working on Russian Doll. Let me know. And she was like, I'm terrified that this is just going to be another one of those. She's like, so I have to continue to work my fucking ass off every single day. And that to me was just like, yeah, Charlie, like, you, if you want to do something, you need to create it. And it's not going to be your first one. It's probably going to be your 20th. Some people get really lucky. Some people are just talented and get it. So more power to you. Figure it out. But my encouragement to the world of artists out there is like, create, 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 collaborate, create, 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 and make it better and better.
Charlie.
Sorry.
No, that's a great thing to add. I'm so glad. I would end it there, but I have two little questions I always ask at the end that I'm going to do anyway.
However you want.
This is good because the baby's about to wake up. If you are in that like dark place, are there any concrete tools that you reach for again and again to kind of help you out of it, like a book or music, like things that you go back to?
Music, always, 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 always. I have like 5-6 songs that I could go to right off the bat that I, funny enough, Anthony, who was in your class, was mm-hmm. the first person to turn me on to this. He's an actor that always chose his inlet in through music to his characters. And I remember him saying that to me and it stuck with me. I take it on another front of like my exit sometimes is through music. My way back into myself is through music. Nice. That I, you know, and it's always things that like my mom would play when I was a kid. So it has some, it's not like the song is a credible song or anything like that. It's just, it's personally, it helps me tap into something. Or it also just like expunges. I have a lot of like Joni Mitchell songs will just make me sit there and be like, oh, just
my favorite.
I know, she's fucking my angel. Dolly Parton too. I'll sit next to Dolly. God. The bargain store, like, and just be like, yeah, baby, I just need to bargain my heart and find love.
I love it, but
if not that, I'm not really good at, you know, we were talking about using those tools of like talking to yourself, and that muscle is still really hard for me. It's just a lot of the times I'll get into it and it will start working and then I'll flip, you know what I mean, and it will start to turn on me. So it's like a battle sometimes, but I'm getting better and better at working that muscle. So every single time I try to have a little bit of like, I'm a hippy dippy person. I was raised by a homeopathic like acupuncturist. I'm all about it. But a lot of the times that kind of juju bullshit makes me so fucking upset because it's not tangible, or at least it's not tangible in the moment. But I do try to give like, let me give a meditation moment. Let me take a breath. As much as I hate it, maybe in this moment, take a fucking deep breath, count to fucking 10, do your fucking thing, and then like just allow yourself to get out of stuff. My therapist, though, gave me this brand new one that I've been using this, and I know this is like an old technique, and it's really starting to help. I just start like naming shit that's around me. Like if I get really angry with myself, if I get really angry in general, if I get really hard on myself, depressed, dark, I'll start like right now I'm sitting outside in front of my neighbor's kid's playpen, so a kiddie pool, a plant of rosemary, sand in a bin, right. A fucking car, a Ford. You know, still, a lot of the times the muscle is difficult to work. I'm like, it's hard, and I'll be like, fuck this shit. But
it's like, this is reality. I'm physically here.
Yeah. It makes me, you know, honestly, in a lot of ways, it makes me kind of be like, get over yourself, calm down, move on. It's like, stop being a little baby.
Very good.
Shit sucks. Let's go forward. And the biggest... I keep throwing them in. I know you have another question. The biggest thing, though, is like always... And this one sparingly because it can turn really negative. But you have to remember what you have. Like, I am healthy. I have incredible parents who have fostered me, who supported me on every aspect of my life. I have an incredible partner who supports me and allows me to be individual and make mistakes and forgive me. I have health. I have savings. You know what I mean? Like, start thinking about those things, because then you'll be like, what am I sitting here crying about? There are people who suffer unbelievably more than I can ever imagine. Buck the fuck up and move on. Because you wallowing in this shit is not helping you, and it's not fair to them, wherever they are.
And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently of any art form that you want to recommend?
Oh, wow, that's a hard one right now. Play readings, I think, for sure. Yeah, like, tap in. I, I know myself as an avid, like, lover of theater is still a little hesitant on, like, oh, I have to pull up my Zoom and watch a play reading? That sounds clinical. I really enjoyed doing it, and now I've watched a couple of them, and I've gotten a lot out of it, and it's really, like, really kind of fun. I will say, too, also, just, like, as another outfit, I've been crafting a lot, which is, you know, any kind of, like, I'm a true believer in utilizing art outside of your art to kind of come back around to your art.
What have you been doing? That was a fantastic sentence.
I know, that was a crazy sentence, but actually, I swear it makes
No, I
sense
agree. I just got an adult coloring book that I'm very into right now.
Exactly. It kind of like, I feel like it just kind of like wipes the slate clear. You know what I mean? Like it gets my system fresh. But I have, I mean, all kinds of things. You know that I'm a pothead. I mean, and you can keep that in for the public because I've said that on a couple of interviews. But I will sit and like just, you know, smoke a little and like, I made wreaths for a lot of people. I've not been like knitting. Like, I really want to get into that, but I've been crocheting a little bit.
I want to learn how to do that.
Huh?
I want to learn how to do that. I need to get like a starter kit or something.
Crocheting's like a lot easier than knitting. I think that's why I got to start doing it. It's just like, you know, like braiding sometimes. Mm-hmm. I have been for this show reading. I like created a lot of my props. So I was doing a lot of like, you know, prop creation for it. I was working on this musical with a group of friends, and we were, you know, of course, trying to do it for the cheap and had made a lot of our props for that. So I was spending a lot of months prior to the, you know, basically the day that the quarantine started was the day that we were supposed to open. So
oh my God.
We had to shut down. Yeah. Oh, also, ultimately, though, I took away from that experience being like, yeah, we had the rehearsal process. We built a show. We workshopped it too. You know what I mean? So it's like, we got a lot out of it. I'm not upset that we missed the performance. The performance is the cherry on top, but right. The rehearsal is the fun. Yeah, I'm like, it's
Charlie, thank you so much. This was amazing. It's really amazing. Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. Anything you can give would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.